Jeg fikk lyst til å høre igjen en prat jeg hadde med Negative Plane, og jeg håper du vil det samme. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og gir deg Nameless Void, eller Edward som han heter, på Jernverket.
Maybe I should just say something instead. Let's see. So what am I supposed to say again? This is Nameless Void from Negative Plane, and you're listening to...
Jernverket.
Jernverket.
Yeah.
Maybe I should try that one more time.
Yeah.
This is Nameless Void from Negative Plane, and you're listening to Jernverket.
And I could use the guitar part under it.
Yeah, you... Whatever that guitar nonsense is. Again, this is just me just making up some gibberish as I go along.
My new jingle. Thank you.
I should probably spend time on that.
Yeah, so...
You know, maybe, you know what? As long as I just forget that I came up with it, you know, that I messed around with it, I'll forget it. At least...
In 5 years, I get a call and a, hey, you know the jingle? I made one. Put it on your next album.
Før intervjuet jeg noe jeg må si. For at Jernverket skal overleve som podcast, trengs det midler. Og du kan bidra med støtte månedlig via patreon.com/jernverket eller gi en enkeltsum via VIPS nummer 567438. Beløpet selvsagt valgfritt. All informasjon står nederst i episodebeskrivelser med lenker som fører jeg rett til kassen. Tusen takk for alle bidragene så langt. Jeg klarer ikke dette uten deg.
Hey, evening.
Oh, cool.
And then I'm gonna go to Budapest just to be a tourist. Because I've seen the city once, but didn't really properly see it. I'd like to see it again. And it's a direct flight. And then I'm coming back Friday evening, and then going back home on Saturday.
Hmm. That's a nice trip. I love Budapest too. It's such a nice city. A lot of good food and yeah.
Yeah, we played a show there once, but it was a very, very long trip. So we played there late at night. We were all exhausted because it was very, very hot during then. And then we got up extremely early that morning and then had to go. So we really didn't get to see it too much. So now I'm going to actually see it. It's going to be pretty exciting. It's like, you'll only be there like 3.5 days, but still.
Yeah, so just let's start the serious stuff here.
Okay.
Can you just start with telling who you are and what you do in Negative Plane?
I play guitar in Negative Plane, and I also do the vocals. Do you want me to give the...
The full list.
The pseudonym or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. The name Nameless Void is the name that we put on there because we wanted to have a name that was as unspecific as possible. Mm. And then, but my real name is Edward Miller.
Yeah, but do you prefer to be called Edward in interviews?
I mean, you know what? I do so few interviews that it doesn't really matter to me.
Oh.
You know? I never have anybody saying... I feel honestly kind of silly if someone's sitting and using my pseudonym the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, that's silly, you know? But
yeah. And people will find out who you are anyway, so...
Oh, I don't care. It's not like, you know, it's...
But actually, I was kind of a bit nervous. Just to, will I recognize him? What if he wears, like... a white shirt and blue jeans and has cut his hair, would I recognize you? Probably not. But you look the same as you do on stage.
Yeah, I kind of do. Yeah, I don't change a whole lot.
Yeah, so maybe we could start at the beginning, the Negative Plane story. Okay. When did it all start out?
It started out in sometime in 2001, the very beginning of it, I believe. I was trying to do like organ music and bells and things like that because I didn't think I could come up with anything good for metal stuff. And then when I came up with a name, I was taking a college course. Since everybody always wants to ask about the band name, I might as well tell people too. The band name, it comes from when I was taking the class, the instructor was telling us about the parts of a picture, and saying that the positive picture plane are the brighter, more prominent colors in the foreground, and the negative picture plane are the darker, more hidden colors in the background. So I liked the metaphor quite a lot, and you know, I wanted a name that would be different, that I could go anywhere with. So I just took the word picture out, and it's called Negative Plane.
Hmm.
So I did that. I worked, basically, it's tried to do the organ bell stuff, and then whenever I try to do something, I usually end up being starting messing around with something else and then completely change it because it doesn't work out. So I actually started coming up with like metal songs. I was working with, I had a friend who had a drum machine, and we started out really, really just very kind of very amateurish. He would literally, he had a drum machine. We didn't have a drum set or a drummer. He knew how to play. So he played on the drum machine like this. That's literally how we practiced. I plugged in, he had some music equipment. I plugged into his guitar pedal. I played along with him. I came up with stuff at home and then brought some ideas to him. And then we would literally play like this. And then we would record it like that. That's how our first demo came around in like 2002. I remember one of the things I was really into at the time was like Vedbu and Zen and things like that. So some of the stuff's a little bit of a ripoff of that, I think. I don't know, after a little bit doing that though, I kind of felt like we weren't doing, you know, I wasn't really satisfied, and we didn't figure out how we really wanted to sound yet. And I think right immediately after that demo, I don't like the sound on it. It's way too plastic sounding, and of course it's somebody playing a drum machine, and but you have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, then it was like right after that is when I met Matthias Azar. That's our drummer. I guess Bestial Devotion is the name it says on the sleeves. And I met him at a Destruction show. We just said, hey, you know, I was wearing a Beharit shirt, and nobody in Florida listened to Beharit at, you know, at that time. It was kind of one of those, like, you know, who cares about that stuff. So he was like, hey, look, you're wearing a Beharit shirt. And we started talking, and then I told him I needed a vocalist at the time because I couldn't sing and play guitar, and I figured this guy playing the drum machine would eventually get a drum set, which he never did. So anyways, it turned out he started out doing the vocals, and then, you know, I play guitar, and then the person doing the drum machine, he didn't like the direction I wanted to take Negative Plane in, which was a more like older, more evil sounding direction to me. Less Fed Buen's End influence, more just Merciful Fate and, you know, like 80s black metal kind of stuff.
Mm.
He didn't really like that, and that's what I wanted to go with, so he just kind of stopped coming to practice and things like that. And I started working with some other drummer down in Orlando, started driving down there. We tried to make the song sound good, and we tried for like 6-7 months or so with Matthias doing vocals and this drummer playing drums, and he was terrible. He was awful, and we actually would get depressed at practice because it was like we would play Staring Into the Abyss because that was one of the, we'd play that, we would play Death Mass, we'd play A Church in Ruin, and we played one of the demo songs from Surreality, Screams from the Void, we'd play that, and then it sounded so bad, and we tried to record a demo, and it was hilariously bad. But then we found out that when he would go off and try to play something, and then like he'd go off and take a break and smoke pot or whatever, then Matthias the vocal, you know, the vocalist at the time would jump on the drum set and he'd play it much, much better. Because he just kind of like messed around on his friend's drum set, but he would play the songs much, much better. And I don't know why it took us so long to come up to the right conclusion, just because, again, you know, we didn't know how things were supposed to be with, you know, real band at the time. Eventually, we said, wait a minute, why don't you just play the drums? So, and then Matthias didn't want to deal with trying to play the drums and do the vocals at the same time. And, you know, since I wrote all the lyrics and music anyway, I figured, okay, I'll just learn how to play and sing at the same time. Sing, whatever. And that's kind of how everything fell into place. We moved into a house in like the outskirts of Orlando, a little small town where it was like a house where it was just out, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. We could play as loud as we want any time of night, and we just rehearsed in the living room. And that's how we started doing the first album. We tried lots and lots of bass players. We actually recorded a promo. We had a bass player at the time, but he was so lazy, he would never show up. I'd actually literally have to like call him, try to pick him up, and he would like be too lazy to get up and answer the door. So, but we actually got signed to Ajna because we put his name on there anyway because we didn't want to look like a two-piece, because everybody was doing one-piece, two-piece black metal bands at the time. We wanted to look like a real band, so we like, even though I played the bass on it, we put his name on it anyway, just so we were like, you know, look like a real band. And it worked. So then, yeah, but then we recorded the album, just the two of us, the first album, and then not long after that, we moved up to New York and then found a bass player, and then, you know, after a little bit of time, did Stained Glass Revelations as well. I'm skipping a little bit forward in time with some of the stories and everything like that, but...
No problem.
Don't mind me, I'm just trying to remember all the important details and everything, and I'm sure there's lots that I'm missing right now from our history, but...
But what? Why did you move from Florida to New York? Did you know that the scene... Was the scene, like, better there, or what made you...
Well, Florida's not the place for us. Looking back, I could say living in Florida, we were so bored that we had nothing better to do than work on music and things like that. But I mean, the atmosphere there is just, it's hot all the time. It's just palm trees and it got very, very depressing, and we needed to leave and get a change for a while. We were actually trying to figure out where in the States we wanted to go to, and New York just seemed like the most promising place. So, and then Matthias's wife had a family up there, and then I could relocate my job there, so that's why we picked it. And on top of it, we figured, because again, I told you, we had countless numbers of bass players, and I got so sick of teaching the songs to people and everything like that, and we figured we'd find a lot more musicians in New York. It's a larger city with more people, therefore probably more musicians. And it worked. Within like 2 weeks of being in New York, we found our current bass player. Well, now he's our second guitar player because he's not been able to come to Europe because of visa issues.
So, but do you have a European bass player that steps in?
No, we have Lewis, who I'm sharing this room with. He hasn't been on any of the albums, but he plays in another band with Diego, who is the guitar, you know, the bass player. He was the bass player on Stained Glass Revelations, and now is the second guitar player. What was I saying here? Okay, yeah, no, because he couldn't go, he said, okay, well, why don't you have him go this instead? So Lewis has been playing with us.
Okay.
Ever since we come over here. But no, we rehearse a lot, and we have to really get things right. There's really no way we could rehearse, just meet somebody here and play. There's no way we could do that. We really need to be really like practicing with each other all the time to make sure we sound good, and because the songs get kind of complicated and everything.
Yeah, okay. Because the reason I asked was that I read that you had a player in Europe, but that might just have been a mix-up with getting a second guy in, or a fourth guy, really.
Yeah, no, Lewis goes to Europe with us. He lives in the States. We practice with him. He wasn't on the album or anything. He wasn't on any of the albums, but he does a very good job. You know, he's been playing with us since 2011. He's done very well.
Let's talk a little bit about the songwriting. Okay. That's you have very complex songs, and you get to feel that there's a lot of work put in them, especially since you don't put out albums every year.
No. I wish I could think of a cool album every year, but it doesn't work like that. You want to know about the songwriting?
Yeah, yeah. How do you put the song together? How do you start? Is it like do you have an idea from the beginning, a feeling, or do you just start playing and, hey, this riff is cool?
That happens a lot of times, and then I build on that. Sometimes I think of a song title, and then I try to think of things, that music that would sound like that song title. But yeah, I'd say it's half and half. It's usually me starting, coming up with just messing around on the guitar, and then I come up with something that I think sounds good, and then I build something from there, and then say, oh, okay, well, this sounds like it would be the good first part of a song, or this would be a good ending to it. Mm. I'm very, very specific on what song I think would be. I'm very specific about the order of songs on an album. That's one thing, is like, yeah, I sometimes write something because I want it to be the first song, I want it to be the last song, because that's how I grew up. I used to listen to tapes when I was growing up, and I'd always be like, I remember being very, very into like a band having a great first song, and it fits as their first song and the first last one. But yeah, with the songwriting, I mean, let's see, for example, like Stained Glass Revelations, the song, the main riff that opens the song, I thought of that first, and then I thought of the ending, and then I actually worked backwards in that one. But I think of it, most of it, like the coming up with things for the most part is like, you just find one piece and then you build on that, you find out where that meets, and then, I don't know, it's like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, like a bunch of like streams moving into becoming a river or something like that. Little parts coming together to become one thing. And the hardest thing is for me to actually find out how to put it together. Mm. Because I want it to, you know, I want to put it together so it, you know, there's a lot, it builds a lot of tension at the right places. I don't want to play things a certain too many times. I don't want to sound repetitive. And that's a very, and I don't want to sound like other people. So that's it's a big challenge. It takes a long time to work on those things. Another time, like you were talking about, I remember going by when we were in Florida. I went to close that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the sun is too hot.
Yeah,
and
yeah, you're right.
It's never sunny in Bergen, so.
Yeah.
So the first day when it's sunny, we actually draw the curtains. That's
okay.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah. No. Where was I? Yeah, I was at, like, for example, All Souls. I saw a cemetery. We passed a cemetery that said All Souls Cemetery, and I was like, oh, great song title. I'll think of everything later. And then I wanted to make a song that sounded like what I pictured that title would be like. Hmm. Or like Unhallowed Ground. I remember hearing the song title. And thinking of the song title, reading something about, like, you know, Transylvania and everything, and then I figure it's like, okay, we have to, you know, I want to think of something that sounds kind of like what the song title would sound like. That's very, very important for me, is that the music and the lyrics sound like each other. Hmm. Like, I want the lyrics to sound like the music. You know, I always come up with the music first, and then I add the lyrics for that afterwards. But that, I feel like everything should sound, it should match with each other.
Yeah, so you fit the feeling into the music through the lyrics and the other way around.
Yes.
But then this means actually that you have a lot of puzzle pieces laying around in your head and on tapes, on whatever.
Oh, yes, I have like, now, because, you know, technology's evolved, and, you know, now, you know, we have smartphones and things like that. But I did have like little tapes of ideas and things like that. Now I have a little riff tape thing on my phone. I have like a bunch of different like riffs, and, you know, I say, okay, I think this is the fifth song riff or riffs, and then I listen to them and try to figure out how they're supposed to go together and everything. But yeah, that's generally, I just, exactly like you said, like lots of little puzzle pieces and trying to figure out how they go together.
Mm-hmm. But how far are you from a new album now? Since there's been
very
six
close, actually, got to think of the words, but most of the music's done.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like put down in the studio yet, or you just have the songs ready?
The hardest part is writing it. Mm. Once we have it written, recording it and putting it there is pretty easy. You know, me and Matthias work very, very quickly once we like know how things are supposed to go. And especially during the writing process, I'm a lot of times working stuff out with Matthias. And then he, you know, by the time the whole song's put together, we've already messed around with lots of sections. So it doesn't take us long to rehearse it. Yeah, so once we have it all written, recording it won't take much longer. It'll take maybe a couple months from the writing to rehearse it and get it there. The hardest part, I think recording stuff, the thing takes a lot longer than recording is mixing things for us. Yeah. Very, very, very hard to mix an album these days. It's like I always wonder how bands back in like the 80s and everything could just go into a studio, somebody pushes play and record on something and it sounds amazing. And the band just gives a general idea. Now you have to, if you go to a studio, you have to fight with the engineer because they want to make everything really, really clear sounding. You know, I mean, I understand that from a studio point of view, but from us, we want the exact opposite of that. We want it to be murky, and you know, we want it to have a certain atmosphere. And you know, studios don't even like slightly understand that idea these days. They just want it to be as, you know, you hear every little piece. And for us recording stuff, we don't really care if people hear every little note and everything. We'd rather the atmosphere be stronger than to hear like how well we play our instruments. It's more important that the atmosphere is good.
The problem now might be that there are so many choices to do in the studio. You can do the same take thousands of times, or cut them up, or you can put whatever effect you want on it. You don't need to experiment. You can do everything in the studio, and that limits the possibilities to actually do something great on the first try.
I definitely think that sometimes, yeah, having too many choices makes it a little bit harder for people. Makes it harder to get a good record out of it. And I just, studios, a lot of them, even like bands that I've talked to a few bands. We've talked to, you know, about like, you know, albums we like, you know, from the 80s and 90s, and then bands will try to go to that studio. Like we loved the sound on Incantation Onward to Golgotha. We tried to go to the same studio and record like something there and see what it sounded like, and then of course the guy made it sound terrible because he didn't want to make it sound like the way he did in like 1992. He wanted it to sound as updated as possible, and even when we said we wanted to sound like that, they just, you know, you can't, sometimes it's very hard to recreate that time. I had another friend, they went to go record something at you know, one of the places that Master's Hammer did a demo at. You know, because they love the demo sound, and we did, you know, of course we love it too. And then I was like, and it sounds great in theory, but that studio doesn't want to make it sound like the way they did in 1988. They want to make it sound like the way they do, what's supposed to sound in 2017, which is, you know, very, very sterile, very clean, you know, and then, you know, just the way modern recording sounds, which is terrible usually.
It's flat.
Very flat, very soulless, and it sounds very updated. Yeah, it just has very, very lifeless sounding. It's not the way like metal should be sounding to me.
Have you thought about mixing yourselves?
Of course, that's our plan. Mixing is so hard, and then it's even more frustrating. You're in a studio, and everything sounds amazing on the studio monitors. You go home and it sounds depressing when you listen to it the way you would normally listen to it, like on a shitty stereo, or, you know, it's very, very harder than if you're doing things for like 8 hours that day. Your mind is just, you can't even listen to anything anymore. And then like we always hear these stories about Black Sabbath, you know, they record their first album, they don't even get a choice, and then of the mixing, they're like, okay, you have to leave now while we mix the album, just go do something else. And then it turns out to be like the most amazing thing ever. Mm-hmm. We're like, why can't we have that?
I think that your last album sounded great, so was good.
We had to, we had to fight for that one though. The situation that I'm telling you happened to us very badly. We go home, we mixed it. The first day we recorded, everything sounded great from the recording. Then they're like, okay, let's start mixing stuff, and it sounded depressing. We heard it, we were like, this is awful. We think we did like 3, 4, 5 different mixes of it, and then it just, and then somehow it ended up turning out much better. But yeah, we do demo versions ourselves, and then we just keep telling them, try to sound like the demo version, because we like the way that, you know, the demo sounds more than like the studio sound.
The accidental good sound.
I mean, and when we did, like, because we did demo versions of Stained Glass Revelations, we brought those in, and those sounded gigantic. We just told them, like, sound just like this. And then the demo versions, we mixed it in all about 5 minutes. We literally just, we're just, turn everything up, turn all the reverb max up, Yeah, and then the studio, it's like you do it for like 8 hours and then nothing happens.
Nå det endelig helg hos Meny, og denne helgen får du fersk norsk angusburger til fast sommerpris 24,90 per stykk, 400 gram fersk karbonadedeig til 64,90, sommerkål til 24,90 per kilo, og 700 gram Jarlsberg til 85 kroner, både i butikk eller levert hjem. Meny, spiser du bedre, lever du bedre.
Now we've talked a lot about the music and writing processes, and what about doing all this live, trying to make the atmosphere real in front of people's faces?
I actually think that's pretty easy for us, because we don't sound a whole lot different on recording than we do when we're rehearsing. I mean, Matthias, he's a great drummer. He hits very, very, very heavy. He doesn't, he doesn't use triggers or anything like that. There's not a whole lot of studio trickery that we have to do. I mean, you just put a little reverb on the drums, and he sounds the way he does on the albums. And a lot of the stuff I wrote was just for, like, I wrote it with one guitar. So, well, I mean, of course, two guitars is always better, and hopefully the next time we come to Europe, Diego will have his papers so we can actually play a two guitar set, because we've been really, really wanting to do that over here in Europe, and we haven't been able to yet. But no, I think, like I said, we just use whatever they have here. I have a couple pedals I use to add to the atmosphere, and then it works out very, very well, I think. I think, like I said, we don't need a whole lot to sound the way we do, we just have, we put some reverb on it, put some delay on the vocals, and it sounds the way we want it to, I think. Maybe minus a couple layers, because we don't have the second guitar, or maybe, I can't do the keyboards at the same time or anything like that. But otherwise, yeah, I think so.
We should rent Taj Mahal for you. Is that, they have like 17 seconds of reverb or natural reverb?
Oh, we'd love to play in some place like that. We very, very much, like, somebody was asking us, like, if you guys could have your ideal, place you could play at. We'd love to play at an old cathedral or something like that, but, no one's going to let us do that. We're not that. Maybe one day.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe one day. Maybe we get a couple more albums out, and hopefully at a faster pace, But yeah, no, we would love to play something like that, where we don't even have to put anything on the guitars, anything on the vocals. It just sounds huge. I mean, like that sound. I mean, I was raised in a Roman Catholic family. We'd always go to church, and I hated it. I hated sitting through it, but I do remember, like, all the chant, the prayers and everything. It sounded really cool because they always have, like, big, everything sounds very, very large. All the rooms have, so much space and everything to make it, I guess, to make the message that the priest is saying sound more powerful. And it works for us, too, I think.
Yeah, and some of the melodies from the the Psalms are really nice too. You can
absolutely
kind of evil sometimes too.
Oh, I remember. I definitely took note of that. I definitely did. I'm very, very inspirational for me as well. Mm-hmm. So.
So, what about? Do you have any like good stories or memories from your time as a band? Like, if it's a Spinal Tap-ish or a fanboy situation or. Something weird that has happened to you?
I don't know. I mean, we're not the most wild, you know, we're not like Motley Crue or anything like that. We don't have anything, you know. I mean, we're pretty mild. I don't know. I think I know we've got, let's see. Besides, I remember we had to rehearse in my friend's trailer in Florida because we couldn't find a rehearsal space right there before we moved somewhere. We did that. I remember when I recorded the vocals on the first Negative Plane album, we had to hurry up so we could go see Danzig afterwards. I do remember that. We went to a Danzig, like, and we had to like, all right, we have to hurry up. We have to keep this take because we don't want to be late for the show. I do remember that. But no, we don't. I'm trying to think here. You know what? Matthias is probably much, much better at remembering all the outrageous stuff. We do have a couple things, but maybe probably I shouldn't tell about them, you know.
So you actually just been lucky on all your shows and trips and never anything weird happened?
Like, oh God, no.
Power went down or the car
broke
down?
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Spinal Tap moments. I know we've got them. I mean, we're a very disaster prone band sometimes, but oh God, I'm trying to remember here. I don't think during shows we've had the Spinal Tap thing happen to us quite as much, but outside of shows, absolutely. I think that kind of stuff happens to us quite a lot. Yeah, Spinal Tap mode. Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, I know there is. I just, off the top of my head, I cannot think of one right now, but we're definitely no exception to that here. I feel like any story I'm going to tell is probably going to be kind of boring, honestly, compared to some of the stories I've actually, other bands have done and everything.
But you told me before this interview that you never got anything interesting to say, and now we've been talking for half an hour, so.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just rambling on. If I think of a Spinal Tap moment later on, I will let you know.
Yeah. Because now we could go over to the song picking, because half an hour, that's probably enough for a radio interview.
Okay.
But you're also to pick out the songs for the show. So I would like you to pick between 10 and 12 of your favorite songs. One of them should be a Negative Plane one.
Okay.
And the other one should be favorites or inspirational songs from other bands.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Merciful Fate, Come to the Sabbath, I think. I can't decide. There's so many great Merciful Fate songs.
I know.
Actually, Merciful Fate, Black Masses, I want to pick that one. And then, let's see, Black Sabbath, Wicked World, that's one I can think of. And probably later on I'll be like, oh, why did I pick that one when I could have picked this other one? Let me think here. There's a very, 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 very underrated band from Germany. There's a few bands with the same name from the same, called Martyrium, that's been a huge influence on us. They have their drummer is a little hectic sounding and maybe not always on time, which I, you know, but yeah, there's an amazing album that I really want to, let's see, I'm trying to think of a song from that. Yeah, there's it's Martyrium Into Midnight Silence. There's, again, it's the first, one of the very first black metal bands in Germany. Very, very good, very underrated band. They only did one album, and so that's a shame. And that's been a huge influence for us. I don't know, there's a band called, in Colombia, called Parabellum. Let's see, 666 Sagendro. I'm saying it the United States way, you know, even I'm not pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. There's some. Let's see. Mortuary Drape. Big. Another amazing band. Big thing for us. Mortuary Drape, Mother. That's a very, very good song. Let me think. What else?
What about the Negative Plane song?
Do I have to think? I was going to think of that last. let's see. Wait. Black Hole. Black Hole, Land of Mystery. Another amazing, amazing. That's a band. That's an amazing band. I didn't hear them on the first Negative Plane album, but we heard them after we did the first one, and that was a big thing for us for Stained Glass Revelations.
Black Hole
Mystery? Yep, from Italy. Black Hole, the song Land of Mystery. Mm. It's very, very, it's, I don't know, I'm trying to how to describe it. It's like Black Sabbath and Pink Floyd on PCP or something. Mm.
I like it when you actually pick songs from bands that I haven't heard yet. That's cool.
Oh yeah, Black Hole is an amazing band. I haven't listened to them in a while, so that's something to listen to again soon. Let's see, Bulldozer, Insurrection of the Living Damned. That's another one. Mm-hmm. That's a great band here. Of course, Venom. To Hell and Back, we have to have a Venom song, of course. Hellhammer Revelations of Doom, gotta have that one. Oh, let me think.
Could also just take a song that you would put on if you were going to a party. It doesn't have to be like really seriously inspirational. It can just be, this song rocks.
Oh, well, we'd probably pick AC/DC or ZZ Top or something like that, you know? We'd probably put, like, ZZ Top cheap sunglasses or AC/DC Bad Boy Boogie or something like that if we were going to go and put that stuff on, which is too weird. Which is not the stuff we'll listen to when we're hanging out drunk at the rehearsal space. I mean, I'm sure it's probably inspired us in a different way. No, let's see here. Okay, let me think. I know there's something else. I know there's actually a million other things here.
Yeah, it's always.
I really love the first couple Satyricon albums. I really like those. From something from like Dark Medieval Times or Shadow Through. I think, I'm trying to think of which one. It's bad because sometimes I don't remember the actual song titles. I just know how they go.
You should just sing it.
Let's see. It's the very last song on Dark Medieval Times. I just can't remember what it's called now.
No, but I'll find it. I suck at song titles too, so I really often have to put on a whole album just to click through it to find the one song. Ah, okay, it's this one. That's the title.
Yeah, no, I really love those first two Satyricon albums. Very, 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 very. I mean, of course, you know, you've got like the really, really influential Norwegian bands, which also, you know, rubbed off on us a lot, especially when we were first hearing black metal stuff like Mayhem and Burzum and, you know, like the first Immortal album. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Immortal Unholy Forces of Evil, should say that one. That's I really like the first Immortal album a lot, just because I didn't like the stuff past that too much, because I loved that our favorite drummer is that guy with the tassels and like he did all the Merciful Fate drum beats. I was just ashamed that they stopped doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. They became some kind of a humor band almost.
Yeah, I mean, even their some stuff on their first one was goofy, but you know the sound we love the sound on that first Immortal. It's a great album. Oh, let's see. Okay, Negative Plane song. Honestly, I think Stained Glass, the song Stained Glass Revelations, is one of the ones I'm most proud of. Hmm. I'll pick that one. It's a really long one, too, so people have to sit through that one.
Yeah, I love playing long songs on radio, because the radio stations hate when I do that.
Can I pick another Merciful Fate song?
Of course you can.
All right, awesome. I want to pick two. That's my problem, is I want to pick many things. Let's see. I want to pick Satan's Fall for Merciful Fate. Speaking of long songs.
Du har hørt et intervju med Nameless Void fra Negative Plane. Og likte du det, kan du for eksempel høre episoder med Vemod og Oransi Pazuzu. Neste vekka blir det I hvert fall historisk, siden John Ritchie slutta I Exciter en stund etter at jeg snakket med.
Like those first three albums are like creative innocence. You know, we're just trying to write good music. We didn't have a goal or anything. Like, you know, we weren't trying to prove anything. We just wanted to write good songs and we hope people like them.
Gjør ikke du ennå, på tide å abonnere på Jernverket podcast, enten via podcast-app eller på jernverket.com. Spre ordet, legg igjen en full pott I anmeldelser, og vil du bidra med litt peng for at jeg skal kunne fortsette, så kan du gi støtte fast via Patreon eller et engangsbeløp på Vips. Informasjonen ligger I episodebeskrivelser. Og husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook for konkurranser, diskusjoner og musikalske tips. Det ekstra artig nå I desember, for jeg har en julekalender på gang med en ny premie hver dag, frem til og med 24. desember selvfølgelig. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og kjører på med et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Vi høres!
Det startet som en helt vanlig dag. Med de helt vanlige rutinene, den vanlige reiseruten og det vanlige stresset. Helt til ingenting var vanlig lenger.
Hvorfor ser alle på meg egentlig? Har det skjedd noe?
Noen har lagt ut bilder av deg på nettet.
Hvis du rammes av et digitalt innbrudd, du ofte den siste som får vite om det. For sikkerhetens skyld inkluderer vi sikkerhetstjenester I våre abonnement. Bli tryggere på Telenor.no sikkerhet.